sacrifice all these different things against the will of the individual for the greater good. Greater good, God, government, all these ideas are abstract concepts that are mostly meaningless. But because we don't, most people do not have the tools to be able to interpret what all of this stuff actually is, we are left lost. We are left in this nihilistic kind of world where we don't really know anything at all, or at least we have the capability to be able to learn, but we didn't quite know the tools to do it. And that's where, obviously, you know, the ideas in regards to property rights come from in.
I spent 15,000 hours in a sort of prison confinement area of public schooling, and I don't remember a whole lot of question marks being used, except maybe on tests. They used a lot of question marks on tests, but not in teaching itself. So the convolution of, you know, these ambiguous definitions and all these other things, that's schooling. Pledging allegiance to a flag before you can even understand the words that you're imitating every day. And American schooling is not the American education system it once was. Schooling refers to instilling a type of groupthink, breaking down the individuality of individual, making them cogs in the machine, eventually through the school system to serve a corporate state. So there's a lot to that. A lot of people can't see it because it's like, you know, fish being in water. And you only get exposed to what was water when water gets taken away. And you can do that through reading. You can do that through asking questions. But until most people pause or run up into a wall in reality, they go through life assuming, which is the opposite of asking questions and finding substantial answers.
Hey everyone, this is Carlos Morales. This is the Libertarian Atheist Podcast. Today we have a very special guest of Tragedy and Hope Productions. We have Richard Grove, who has added in a lot of much needed critical thinking tools to the libertarian community for quite a while now, and I'm really glad to have him on. How are you doing today, Richard?
I'm great, Carlos. Thanks to you for inviting me, man.
So in our introduction episodes for the show, where I was doing it with Megan and with Calvin as well, we were kind of talking about the ideas of the problems with faith and how faith relates to the way that people choose to think about government and religion as a whole. Essentially, believing in abstract concepts that are many times contradictory to the entities which supposedly make them up, and people believing those things without evidence or in direct contradiction to evidence. Now, presently within the United States and many other Christian nations across the world, faith is something that is considered a virtue, something that should be attained and worked towards. You can be an agnostic, but as long as you have faith in something, then it's okay. As long as you have faith in the government, as long as you have faith in unbearable parents or any kind of community outreach, then it's okay. And one of the main reasons for that is because faith is great for manipulating individuals, because it is antithetical to reason and towards freedom of thought, which to me is the most important thing. Libertarianism for me personally is not just about physical liberation, but it is also about mental liberation. Now, after we did this kind of little takedown of faith as a whole, which you can check out in our early episodes, as well as our video on the cult of religion, you were born into a cult exposing the religion of government, I wanted to, well, do something a little bit more than just negative, more than just, you know, crapping on the deities that people are believing in right now. What I want to do is introduce some tools so that we can get along in this world by being able to critically analyze and use creative problem solving in order to be able to understand things. Now, Richard, you've done a lot of work when it comes to understanding critical thinking and logical critical thinking. What to you is the most important first step in trying to understand a new concept?
Using, in your thinking, using question marks, asking questions, learning how to use your five senses to identify the individual parts, how they fit together, and then how new freedom is availed by that truth. That's basically it.
Fair enough. So it's essentially, it starts off essentially with this Socratic concept, which is try to figure out what the actual terms mean. So essentially grammar. If I do not understand what someone else is stating whenever I'm talking to them, then we are left fleeting. And as a result, if neither of us can understand the terms that we're using or the ways in which we're choosing to use those, then communication is brought down from the very beginning. What are some ways in which you've seen this kind of be manipulated when it comes to trying to understand things, like people using purposefully convoluted terminology to confuse or manipulate another person?
Well, what do you mean by that? How would you define it? No, I'm just kidding. I'm just saying we could start by asking, well, what do you mean by that? And try to get on the same page. The experience that I've had with it is the same as most people who didn't have the benefit of being homeschooled. I spent 15,000 hours in a sort of prison confinement area of public schooling. And I don't remember a whole lot of question marks being used, except maybe on tests. They used a lot of question marks on tests, but not in teaching itself. So the convolution of, you know, these ambiguous definitions and all these other things, that's schooling. Pledging allegiance to a flag before you can even understand the words that you're imitating every day. And American schooling is not the American education system it once was. Schooling refers to instilling a type of groupthink, breaking down the individuality of each individual, making them cogs in a machine eventually through the school system to serve a corporate state. So there's a lot to that. A lot of people can't see it because it's like, you know, fish being in water. And you only get exposed to what was water when water gets taken away. And you can do that through reading. You can do that through asking questions. But until most people pause or run up into a wall in reality, they go through life assuming, which is the opposite of asking questions and finding substantial answers.
So the assumptions are based on ideas which were never explained to them at the very beginning, which is kind of how you have most political conversations. I mean, most political conversations, especially whenever you're watching a debate, is two individuals trying to tell everyone else supposedly how they're going to better their lives, but in fact are just arguing about different ways to control individuals without ever giving them really any information at all. So they never define their terms, they never explain the logic of their terms, and then they just go on and on telling you what they're going to do. You never ask why or try to understand. And as a result, you are manipulated on this constant basis, which of course is what public education as a whole is. It's very rarely are you truly understanding the context of any kind of historical thing. Mostly it's just, here are the facts, here are random dates. They don't really coalesce together, but just know that the government always made the situation better.
Well, I think there's also a connection between people making assumptions and not asking questions and their reliance on faith. I think there might be some sort of connection there. And I think the way I relate to people about it is, look, we were all born into this world ongoing. There were already these institutions and these systems set up when we were born into it. So, of course, everyone around us was like, no, this is just how it is. This is just normal. Everyone, you know, works, a quarter to a third of the year and gives it to these other people. And so they can rule over us better because we give them our money and stuff like that. So there's a lot of things that, you know, because they keep our lives so busy. America is not a very literary culture as it once was in the 1700s and 1800s. And now people don't have time to catch up on what happened before they got here because they're so busy dealing with what's going on here. And the internet only kind of makes this a little bit worse on people. Sure, there's a lot of benefits to the internet if you take time to ask questions and structure those questions and find answers that are substantial and relevant. Otherwise, it's the next kitten playing with yarn video or whatever people are passing around that like passes their time without thinking. And so it gets back to the core. You could ask the question, what is thinking? I like the definition that thinking is the non-contradictory identification of that which exists. So we're talking about something useful. It exists in objective reality that we could both observe and test and talk about. And it's not the subjective concept of how emotions or all these other things that are very much part of the human experience. But I think the way that we're all led around is from a very young age, we're told stories that are not true. Whether these stories are related to certain holidays that people celebrate, it's a society that from the very youngest age, we undermine children's curiosity and their inventive nature and problem-solving nature to tell them, hey, the adults here have it all figured out. Before you got here, everyone figured everything out, and it's all right there on the encyclopedia, or today it's on the internet, and there's nothing for you to do here, really. Well, that's not true. There's a lot of things we haven't figured out, even just basic things like what is the nature, form, and function of electricity? It powers our hearts. It powers our minds. It very much plays into the human experience. And yet people don't have any idea like what that really is. They just know how to kind of harness it to run some gizmos, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
If you answer what is electricity, what is its form, function, and nature, and how does it apply to life, you're finding the definition of what life is. That's pretty cool. Nobody's figured that out yet. And so it only starts when you stop to assume, you know, stop assuming.
Yeah.
And that space is where you get some freedom because that's where the questions come in.
And so, and it's important also whenever we talk about, you know, questions of asking why in every particular case, to not make it sound, though, that we're trying to put this position forward of radical nihilism, or the idea that there is absolutely no axioms to go off of, that everything should be repeatedly questioned. Now, I do buy into the idea that things should be questioned, but there are specific axioms which we can kind of go by based off of the universe and how it works, and the certain things that we have to assume whenever we enter into a conversation. Obviously, the law of identity, existence exists, the law of non-contradiction, x equals x, x does not equal y. So there's those kind of ground rules that allow us to be able to get to the next place, to be able to understand a topic better. Now, what I see in colleges, a lot of cases, is massive radical skepticism, or just this kind of weird, I almost call it nihilistic absolutism, where they'll say nothing exists, which is an absolute statement, obviously, but therefore all these other things. So the very basis of whatever claims they're making next has no ground on it whatsoever, because they contradicted it by the very first statement they made. So an important aspect, what's really interesting to me, of course, is when I was in like public school and things like that, we didn't really go over the importance of axioms in trying to understand and conceptualize the universe. Objectivism wasn't exactly something that was going to be taught in public schools. It would be kind of contradictory to the very form of public education and the government as a whole. So that'd be a problem, wouldn't it? Kind of shooting yourself in the foot there. Guess what, guys? Government is corrupt. Oh, wait, we're in a government school. So it's important, obviously, to have these axioms first to be able to get there, and then from there to have that understanding. Then what comes in next, of course, is logic. Now, when it comes to the topic of logic or understanding, from what I see with that, a lot of that is just trying to understand, is there contradictions in the statements being made? So if you make the statement, existence does not exist, well, that is in contradiction to the first statement you just made, so you just contradicted yourself. So that goes against that particular axiom. And then from there, it's just trying to find contradictions and consistencies within reality. So if I make the claim that the world is 6,000 years old, but we have all this evidence to suggest that it's not, well, guess what? I just disproved that particular claim, because I am using the evidence that is presented in front of me that I've been able to give, given through nature, through the research that I do, plus I'm able to test that against the initial axioms, which I already know are true. Does that sound about right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I would point out that, you know, we communicate through language to meet our needs, which means we have needs because there is causality, because things exist and we are conscious of it. And there's all these. So it's this interconnected nature. And from there, you start to see what else is fitting into this puzzle. How do these pieces fit together? And sometimes you have pieces to a puzzle that don't fit in that. And that's the contradiction. And you move it out and you save it someplace else and you find out where that fits in. So it's and then you take action. So it's a continual process of using your observation skills, identifying the individual parts. I mean, I do this all the time. When I have to learn new software, I don't necessarily go find the user manual first. I go through all the menus and all the icons, find out what they do. Before you know it, you figure out how those things fit together. Like, I didn't understand film editing, and therefore learning the grammar or the individual parts of the film editing software, it was kind of arduous. And I'm sure there's a couple things I still don't know how to use. But once I understood, so it's a self-reinforcing system that allows you to open your mind, see how that fits together, process it, and then practice it in reality, oftentimes not getting it right, and you go back to the beginning, oh, what was that other button? You know, and it's a process of elimination sometimes in the realm of self-teaching. But I know that in any given situation, when I'm presented with unknowns or confusion or something I have to do, and I, you know, a problem to solve or something like that, I can start off by using my five senses. What knowledge is there to be gained about this, you know, this subject or topic? And then once you start to identify the more critical parts, like the more important ones, let's say even if you're fixing your car, a lot of us know the major critical parts of an automobile, but every now and then something breaks. And I'm always joking. It's like, oh, well, the Jeep just wanted to teach me about this that I didn't know about. And so it's through getting to know those things that you don't know that are part of that system. That's where the problem usually is.
Yeah, and it's in that kind of imagination and lust for learning that you see a lot of that in children who kind of break things apart and then want to see what's inside. At least some kids, I think, just want to break stuff. God knows I was. But, you know, and they'll ask that continuous question because children have this kind of necessary or want to learn, to understand the universe. It's why they ask why, and why. And, of course, public education essentially shuts that off. It tells them, this is why. Or it doesn't even answer the question whatsoever. They just want them to shut up. So instead, they stick them on Ritalin, Adderall, Depakote, Zyprexa, or something else, because there's too many damn whys in the first place. So what it does, of course, is it is removing the creativity and replacing it with absolute authoritarianism that is, you know, essentially some lackey who went to school for 4 years to do absolutely nothing and then became a public school teacher. So that you are removing that natural urge to want to learn. And, you know, when it came to me personally to start, even, you know, when I got out of high school, I was 18 and I could barely write a coherent sentence. And I'm not even kidding. Like, I mean, I could get through my English classes and everything else, but even writing there correctly was a problem. Even writing your correctly in the correct context was a problem. Semicolons, colons, all those good things, dashes, everything. And so I was arguing with people on the internet. I was reading a lot of libertarian propaganda and shit, Ayn Rand and everything else. And I would start like getting in these little like disputes with people. And then my friends would see it and they go, "Hey, you looked really stupid." And I'm like, "What? What's the problem? My message was perfectly good." And the issue was, of course, my actual grammar, my writing was terrible. So after 15,000 hours of forced education, I couldn't even coherently write one paragraph. Then what occurred was my girlfriend at the time was like, "Hey, do you want to like learn how to be able to write a proper paper?" I was like, "Yeah." So we spent about a week and she taught me every single rule I will probably ever need to know about writing for the rest of my life. I learned that in an entire week purely because I had the urge to do it, because the incentive was provided there. I wanted to be able to explain these concepts to other people because I thought it was helpful for me, and I needed the tools to do it. So I didn't need all that forced education. All I needed was one reason to actually give a fuck. But when you're in high school, public school, middle school, elementary school, the only time you're really writing for an audience, you're writing for some teacher that you don't even care about, for a grade that is absolutely meaningless, for a future that's not even really there. So if you provide the incentives there, then people will actually have that kind of want to learn something else. The same thing with podcasting, video editing, and all the other things that we've been doing here. God knows, you know, if when I was 14 years old, there was no reason for me to learn podcast editing. There was no incentive to do so because I wasn't trying to start a podcast. So whenever you remove those natural, those urges, those needs and everything else, and say, these are the things you need, these are the things you want, you do not need other things, then you're removing that proclivity to want to do those things.
Well, I think that, first off, I wanted to touch on the public education or the public schooling system, because what you're indicating is that these tools are available to humanity. And yet, for some reason, we're not giving them to the next generations. That they're held for special people that pay a lot of money maybe to go to a very, you know, prestigious university. Maybe they'll disclose some of those tools, but not usually to anyone who might use them outside of the system that they're prescribing that use for. It's the same way that they control pain-killing drugs so that they can control people through their pain and make them participate in different systems that they might not want to participate in if they are able to control their own pain. So the public education system, it's not there to teach you how to write a grammatically correct paragraph and be able to communicate and get your needs met through life. They're there to stomp out your creativity. They're there to make sure that you don't really read the right books that might lead you toward freedom. They're like these tools that we're being denied are applicable throughout life. These are things that we would use basically every day. It turns life into its own instruction manual when you know how to read it. And it's about the individual parts, how they fit together, and then how to use and troubleshoot it. It's the same way that anything that we buy has an instruction manual. It's the same format. But until somebody makes it obvious to you that's a systematic way that you can learn, it's not the way you have to learn. It's just, it's easy if you have to communicate it to somebody else. It seems like a logical process. Like you would have to notice that you're hungry, observe the menu, order the food, and then eat it. You can't eat it, then order, then, you know, it does work in a certain digestive order. And then it goes again. Then you get more food. You consume some more data. You learn some more individual parts that you didn't know. You see how those fit in. And that's what learning is. It's a series of doing that over and over again. So whether it's, you know, we all come up and agree with a word that represents this thing outside that stands up out of the ground and has leaves, we call it tree. And that's how we start to communicate. It could be called anything. It is what it is. It exists. And if we use it wisely, we can get shade out of it. We can get fuel out of it. We can get shelter out of it. There's all sorts of things we can do with these resources. But only once we recognize, you know, there's something exists here. There's cause and effect. We're conscious of it. We have certain needs to survive. That's where we get our property rights from. And that's where non-aggression comes in. After all those axioms of that which exists, that's how non-aggression is the logical principle by which peaceful people can live amongst each other without being plundered and pillaged by other people.
So. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when it comes to the idea of concepts, which concepts are just a shorthand way to explain the entities that make it up, they're not supposed to be in contradiction to one another or they're contradiction to the entities that supposedly make it up. And it's really surprising how much manipulation in the world is based off of a lack of understanding of how concepts work. So I'm in a society. Within this society, I'm put at risk of my life for not giving the society specific things. So through taxation, we can go to jail if we don't give them the taxes. So society is there supposedly to protect my life, to meet my needs, and for me to be able to prosper. And in order to protect your life, it threatens your life repeatedly. If you do not forcibly give away some of the labor that you're doing. So society within the government world is just another form of slavery. But when you try to explain that to someone by kind of explaining what society means, and whenever they say something like society is bigger than people, well, there's really only the individual here. I'm an individual, that person's an individual, that person's an individual. We're together. Now, if my interaction with them involves me getting my money stolen away, or throwing me in jail for having some weed, or after I have a kid, I decided to smoke some weed, and then they decided to take that kid, throw him into a foster home where he's repeatedly raped and abused, and then I go to jail, well, I don't really want to be part of that society. But those are the things that they tell us we have to do. We have to sacrifice all these different things against the will of the individual for the greater good. Greater good, God, government, all these ideas are abstract concepts that are mostly meaningless. But because most people do not have the tools to be able to interpret what all of this stuff actually is, we are left lost. We are left in this nihilistic kind of world where we don't really know anything at all, or at least we have the capability to be able to learn, but we don't quite know the tools to do it. And that's where, obviously, you know, the ideas in regards to property rights come from in. You know, the idea of rights as a whole, or self-ownership, all of those things are kind of just axiomatic principles. So I own myself. I have body ownership purely because of the fact that no one else can really own my body. It's a first priority type of situation.
No one else can eat for you. No one else can defecate for you. And there's several things in between that you have to do for yourself.
Exactly. And in order to be able to live, I have to be able to take up space. So private property has to somehow exist because I have to be able to take up space in order to be able to live. And I got to eat shit and drink. So I got to take up some property in order to defecate on. I have to be able to eat food, which means I have to take up resources. And then I have to be able to take up space. So as a result, we live in a world that is scarce. We have scarcity. And we have to do all these specific things. So what are ways that a society can be laid out, or just relationships between voluntary interaction between individuals can be laid out, where those necessary needs are provided for in a way that doesn't lead to force being necessary? Well, one in which private property rights are kind of respected in some kind of civil and interesting way, at least. Homesteading seems like a kind of an interesting principle as far as being able to deal with property rights concerned. And from there, but all of those things are immediately thrown out. All of the grammar, all of the logic of why property rights exist in the first place is thrown out in this utilitarian government type system. So it's, of course, those principles aren't taught to you. Of course, those ideas are thrown away. And of course, altruism and sacrifice and involuntary obligation is presented so much to you as a kid, which is why when we're 5 years old, we look at a fucking flag and say, yep, that's my flag and I'm going to sacrifice myself for it. And praise be to Abraham Lincoln for all the people that he killed in order for me to be a free individual. Thank you to the troops for killing brown people so that I could be a free individual who has to freely give away my money and my labor to Chinese people who owe all the debt.
And don't forget the Native Americans.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Then the absolute sacrificing of a massive group of individuals, and then we put Andrew Jackson on the $10 bill because, you know, reasons and pride and patriotism and everything else.
Well, I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. The first thing I'm going to attempt to address is the notion of stolen concepts and anti-concepts. Now, the stolen concept is like where you're reasoning from the second floor, but you deny the first floor exists. So it's like, you know, the government exists to protect our rights and all this other good stuff, allegedly. And then they use those rights to do the opposite of everything they're supposed to do. That leads us into anti-concepts. So a concept like the greater good, as you mentioned, is antithetical to what an individual is in the nature of this this planet. You've got it's the same thing today as where they're saying we have to be secure from terrorism. Well, you know, that's another excuse that's being used to take away people's rights or to violate their rights. Your rights can't really be taken away unless somebody convinces you that they took them away. So the violation of people's rights is something that is a concern of human beings as long as history goes back. Now, a long time ago, when America was sparsely populated by Europeans and people from Great Britain, there was a lot of people here that were living amidst each other. There were some European trappers and traders, and they had married into Native American societies, and everything was cool until the British came over and started saying, well, this is our land, and we've got this king or queen, and this is the papers that prove it. And this whole sort of thing that started to really dig away at the culture of the indigenous population in this country. And so they bring over these concepts like the legal system. Well, everyone's acquainted with natural law. It's what happens when you're outside. There's no one else around, and you trip over a stone, or you get stung by a bee, or you get bitten by a snake. That's natural law going on out there. It's not the legal system. Natural law is hard enough to survive in. Okay, we need the legal system, they say, when you have other human beings around, and this is where you get the concepts of rights, because if there's no one else around, the concept of rights, the mountain lion doesn't know it, you know, the cougar doesn't know it, the bear doesn't know about your rights, right? Yeah. So it's about, you know, learning what is nature and then what is nature plus living in a society around other human beings. So there's a whole lot of complex risks that human beings have had to survive to get this far. And I see a lot of it just being kind of pissed away. Like, we don't need to know about any of this stuff because we all live in these artificially created terrariums, you know, where the government keeps all their pets so they can be close to the places where the pets have to run on the hamster wheels, or I guess I'm mixing metaphors there. But no. You know, it's not nature, and it's not sustainable in the current form, because it's all built on bubbles and inflation and deceptions and Ponzi schemes. There's all this that at some point is going to come to a correction. Before that point, I would like more people to know about freedom and liberty and how to think your way out of problems and overcome challenges and obstacles in these different situations that we face every day, but it's only going to get worse as long as we keep churning people out of schools that are less intelligent as far as understanding themselves and their environment than the generation before. And that's been going on already for like 100 years. If you start reading the handwriting of people from the 1700s and 1800s, if you read Ben Franklin's autobiography, for instance, the language back then was a lot more specific, particular, precise, accurate. Maybe it's because they didn't have television and radio and all these other things to distract them. But their level of communication was much higher than people's today, for the most part. And if you do have somebody writing at that level today, people can't read or understand it for the most part. And so this is a way that we familiarize ourselves with the past history. That way we can know where we are and thus, you know, have some say in where we're going. And that's what freedom's all about.
So, yeah, the ideas of, you know, whenever you talk about stolen concept, that is actually kind of a really important thing, because that ends up going into the ideas of Ayn Rand, actually, and Nathaniel Brandon both kind of talked about stolen concepts as a whole. But you'll be having conversations with people who will be essentially contradicting their own ideas whenever you're talking to them, which is always apparent whenever you're talking to anyone who's talking about government as a whole, especially whenever they're using words like culture or anything else. There is a point, though, that I wanted to kind of also talk about, and this is a side thing, but you mentioned people being slightly dumber now than in the past. I mean, grammatically, yeah, there's less words being used and everything else, but have you looked into the Flynn effect much?
No, I'm familiar with the Dunning-Kruger effect, which is where incompetent people can't recognize their own incompetence.
Yeah.
What is the Flynn effect?
Okay, well, the Flynn effect, it's interesting. If you take a look at IQ studies from like the 1920s and then IQ studies now, the way the IQ has been modified since the 1920s has always kept it steady so that it'll stay at 100, because the whole point of the IQ studies is that that 100 is always the average. And so what they found was that if you gave someone an IQ test from the 1920s, you gave them that now, they're more likely to score about 110 to 115 now, Right. So what what they are trying to show there is that IQ has actually went up. Now, there's a lot of controversy in regards to understanding IQ tests, race being the number one controversy in regards to all of this. But what it could have also been, though, is that in a lot of those studies, you were dealing with people who were malnourished. And if you're malnourished at a younger age, you end up with a decline in IQ overall. So you'll take a look at like some tribes in Africa, and you'll do a study from like 1975 or so, when that particular area is even more impoverished where it is right now. And then you check it 10 years later, after more of those people were actually able to eat and sleep and everything else, and then you end up with a kind of an increase in IQ. So looking at the Flynn effect, and it's basically kind of making the case that IQ has went up. But then you start looking at the writings and everything else. This is kind of hard to tell. And when it comes to IQ tests as a whole, it gets really itchy because you have race is another thing on there, which I'm not going to touch on here. Stephen Molyneux has destroyed it as it already has. But so it's just interesting, though, to kind of look at those different concepts and seeing how we are before and after public education. Obviously, I would always make the argument that public education is basically a prison cell that's not very beneficial for anyone, and that we will continue to even get more and more intelligent when public education stops, or you know, people just start taking more and more of their kids outside of public school as a whole. But moving over from there, just to hit on a few more things here. Obviously, for individuals, it is important to, once you get kind of your logic down, understanding inner contradictions, to look up things like fallacies and seeing the kind of fallacies that people are using in day-to-day conversations. Whether it's the genetic fallacy of, well, that individual who told you that is kind of an asshole, therefore I don't know if those ideas are true. Or that homonym attack, which was the initial thing they just said, which is calling someone an asshole and saying that their argument is therefore invalid. And there's obviously a whole another list of fallacies. I'll actually insert those onto the bottom of this particular page.
That's actually only a fallacy if that's your argument.
Ah.
If you present a chain of reasoning that says, here's my clear terms, here's my true premises, therefore this, and oh, by the way, that guy's an asshole, that's not an ad hominem. Observation. Yeah. That's not my argument. That's what comes as a result of having reached that conclusion that someone else can verify for themselves and see if he is.
This is a fun language game.
I just wanted to point out real quick before you moved on.
No, that's fair. It's fair. I want to know the asshole thing though, real quick. So if I call someone an asshole, aren't I making an argument that person is an asshole? Like I'm throwing around that definition.
Well, I don't think so, because you're using figurative language. They're not literally an asshole. You're using a metaphor, aren't you?
Yeah, I guess so. So they are
for
whatever.
For illustration purposes, not for argumentation purposes.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. Okay.
I mean,
cool.
That's just my initial thought on it. I mean,
yeah.
I could think more on that.
More on assholes, always.
Yeah. When you're talking about schooling being a prison, I didn't realize. I mean, I knew at one point, but I just always refer to Gatto's magnum opus as the underground history of American education. I pulled out the book yesterday and I just happened to notice the subtitle that's at the bottom, and it's, you know, in a, you know, funny font and a color. It doesn't jump out at you, is my point. And the subtitle is An Intimate Investigation into the Prison of Modern Schooling. And I just, what you're talking about is this prison of modern schooling that has been brought about is something that teaches you basically everything that they need you to know to be an obedient slave in the system, but not anything pertaining to how to become free. And so when you're talking about intelligence, either whether it's going up or down, I don't put a whole lot of weight into intelligence quotients or how they're brought about or, you know, any of that sort of stuff. The intelligence aspect of human beings, in my opinion, from observation, that which exists, is natural. They have to kind of stomp it out in order to control people. Obedience is not natural. They have to use all sorts of Skinnerian and Pavlovian and Watsonian types of methods to control human beings, because prisoners, if they realize they're prisoners, are going to always try to escape. They're always going to try to undermine that system. And the brilliant thing that they did, it's deviously brilliant, but you have to respect the acumen of the people who did put this box around us in the first place generations ago. They wanted people to think that they're free, and then they cease to try to escape. And this is part of the mythology about America being the land of the free, home of the brave, all this sort of stuff. At one time, yes, some people read Locke and a whole bunch of other philosophy that said, hey, individuals have a lot more power here than we were being told, and it's logically, you know, feasible that we should all just, you know, kind of be ruling over ourselves if we follow these basic principles. We could probably do that. And they don't want that. That means the extinction of government. So as long as they can keep people thinking that they're free, like, what's the word for a slave who doesn't know about freedom? What about a slave that thinks they're free?
I would be a slave who thinks they're free.
Someone who endures slavery but thinks they're free. You can call that an American. Someone who's gone through a public schooling system, who's pledged allegiance to the flag, who gives, generously in their tax dollars and makes sure they, do those taxes right and voluntarily submit them so that these people can create all these crazy experiments with technology and testing on people. I mean, some of the most atrocious things that you could ever, make up in your mind, they've done worse in reality, and they've made a system of it. And this country isn't the first to run that system or the latest or the greatest to run that system. And it's not even a lot of the things that go on in this country aren't even controlled by anybody in this country. Because of the trend for globalization and the multinational companies that spread across the earth like over 100 years ago. So there's a lot going on, and schooling's not going to point any of that out to people. And if they gave you, if you walked into kindergarten and you spent the first week learning how to learn anything for yourself, couldn't you pretty much go back home and follow your interest? As long as, somebody, maybe some parents were facilitating that, getting you the right books. When you're interested in science, you get the right book for learning how to do that. I mean, there's so much that can be, the whole world's a classroom, but they make us think that, no, you got to go to school to learn. Oh, no, you got to go to college and have these people read you books and assign you a bunch of stuff, right? Like, when I went to college, most of the professors that I had for classes were research scientists that were there to do research, and they had to teach a class. So it's not like these are people who love to teach classes and are really talented in communicating what the knowledge of and wisdom of the past. You know what I'm saying? It's a racket, and the sooner that you can figure out whether it's in, grade school, high school, college, that it's a racket. Hopefully your parents figure it out, that it's a racket. You can then liberate yourself, and now the world's your classroom. Where do you want to go? Maybe you should go with your family and travel all over the place and start learning about things firsthand, and building up some of the family bonds that have been broken over the past at least 60 years through the schooling system, 80 years going back to where it's really becoming, compulsory with truant officers and all this other stuff that goes on. It's like, wait a minute, the state is all up in everybody's families. Like, they start with the marriage license, they go with the birth certificate, the next is the vaccinations, then you're in schooling, and then you're part of it.
Well, and what's interesting about marriage licenses is people fighting for those right now, the capability to be able to get a marriage license, and not kind of realizing the fact that marriage licenses were part of a eugenics plan early on in order to prevent miscegenation. Miscegenation, by the way, folks, is black people dating a white woman, or just any kind of cross relations whenever it comes to race. So they set that up early, 1900s, as well, along with progressivism and everything else, the marriage licenses, and they actually go across the country destroying marriages and families because a white woman fell in love with a black man or a Hispanic man or anything else. So those are all early on tools. And a lot of the original foster homes, the state-run foster homes, were also basically were eugenics plans. I mean, that was a lot of the sterilizations, the mental health clinics, all those places really had their branches in those. And it's still kind of part of that. It's, I love you so much that I want to get the government involved. And it just speaks to that whole parent mentality of the state as being your parent. And even libertarians who like the Constitution are still kind of in that. The founding fathers are their religious figures. We need to go back to a time when this badly written 1776 form, which condoned slavery, taxation, and war, we need to go back to when that was okay. We need to go back then, rather than respecting your own individual autonomy, your own willpower, and respecting the rights which are just axiomatically derived from the very act of living. So it's once you can kind of get these critical thinking tools going, all these other things start to break down. But the positive aspect of this is, yes, you start seeing the tyranny in the room, but only then can you free yourself from it. So we can lock ourselves in this position of desperation where we're constantly worrying about things that are completely outside of our sphere of control because we see the violence that it commits, the Federal Reserve, the war system. We can see all these things and we can't actually do anything about it. And then therefore we lose ourselves because we just are constantly sad about that fact. Now, with these tools, we can actually learn new things. We can try to remove ourselves from the state as much as we can. And then we can go learn how to do software engineering or music or anything else or other things which can further free your life in the ways that you can. We have shackles on us right now, but we still have our brain. We still have that capability as long as we're not drugging ourselves too hard or taking the wrong kinds of drugs, which prevent the freeing of your mind in other kind of ways. So these are positive things that can help kind of propel us forward rather than just living in this kind of narcissistic echo chamber filled with hate, which I wrote about. By the way, everyone, you guys check out my newest article, Libertarian's Guide to Outrage Porn, where I kind of go into this whole negativity thing where we learn new things and then we use those things to shame other people. Libertarianism. And I'm trying my best to help move people out of that. Obviously, I try to fight some whales too, like Child Protective Services and what I'm doing. But I have the abilities to be able to do those in specific ways, and that makes me a happier individual. I'm not doing this out of trying to be some kind of sacrificial lamb for the greater good. It's just these are things I want to do because it helps me inside. I feel better when I'm doing these things, and I want to help as many people as I can. So we've running about 42 minutes in here. Richard, are there some more concepts maybe that I know we're kind of just doing introduction right now, but there's some other things you'd like to bring up?
Well, I think it when you were talking about, look, some of this information is not happy information. To find out how generations of people have been deceived into and basically tricked out of their life's worth, their valuable time, their family's future, and that's not even people who have sent their kids over overseas to war in the name of this country and to fight for freedom. So the question is, you know, what are we going to do about it? After we learn about, okay, there's some dark history and, okay, this is where we're at right now, what are we going to do about it? I think that's an important question. And in answering that question, we have to look at what tools do we have available that we can use to remedy this situation. So the tools are neutral. If people are using these tools to take away your freedom, to violate your volition, then that's not a good tool. You want to stay away from that, but you also want to know how it works so you can stay away from it. If the tool is being used to give yourself the intrinsic freedom that every individual on this planet deserves and can attain through learning about themselves and learning about their environment through asking questions, then I think that's the solution. That's how those tools can be used to liberate minds, or not even to liberate minds, to teach people how to liberate their own minds, how to unlock their own minds. Because the process of so-called waking up or any of these other terms that are used to describe the evolutionary process from first noticing, here's the splinter in the mind, here's the questions, here's your answers, and now you've arrived at a conclusion that is in direct conflict with the illusion that they bring everybody up to believe. And then you find out that there are other people who have discovered this along the way. Some wrote books, you know, in the last century, some wrote books 1,000 years ago. This is a story in human history that's been going on for a long time. And the only trend I really see over human history is people using words to take away the freedom of others, people using monopolies of force to take away the freedom of others. So there's a game in town, it seems, for humanity, for individuals to learn how to be free and to fight off oppression and plunder and having their wealth pillaged by these well-organized cartels of gangsters or, Genghis Khan type of marauders that, hit you when you're not expecting it, try to, basically live a life without earning their way through it, without doing their own work. They think it's easier to take somebody else's. And that's been going on for thousands of years. We're born into this particular time in history where it would really behoove ourselves. I'm not saying anyone has to do this because it's all about voluntarism. I'm just saying living in a technological society where we can be taken advantage of any number of ways just from the technology that we're using for the internet connection that we get our information or pay our bills or using credit cards or any of this other stuff that goes on. There are so many ways that you can be, taken advantage of. The same way with what we see on television and newspapers and in schools. There are so many declarative sentences being used that are not questioned, that are not being fleshed out with the who, what, where, when, why, and how of the situation. And without that, you don't have knowledge. You have gossip. And so investigative journalism and muckraking used to answer those questions. And with answering those questions, you can provide the identity of the time, the place, the person, the reason, et cetera, the method, right? Those are all forms of identification, those words. And that's how we used to collect and pass along useful knowledge about objective reality. That is like decades and decades ago that went out of style. And now it's just the latest blurb about this meaningless thing that doesn't matter to you, or there was a shark attack over here, so everybody in middle America should know about it and be worried. And that comes from people not having the intellectual self-defense to say, well, you know what? Nothing they're talking about pertains to me or any of my priorities. And I have the availability of all the information in the world at my fingertips through the internet connection. So why would I continue watching some sort of programming? I mean, they say what it is. The companies that send the programming across those hundreds of channels that are on the TV and easily accessible and all this other stuff, there's a reason it's so easily accessible. There's a reason you can watch a show on just about anything except how to free your mind and how to free your body in this place. They'll tell you about anything on that television except the things that you really need to know about your environment and yourself that they have strategically hidden generation after generation after generation. And when you come across books like Gatto's Underground History of American Education, you're finding it's like, look, he's not the first guy to kind of discover this. There was guys in the 1800s that were seeing this as it was unraveling and unrolling. But not many other people took the time to notice it, then do a whole bunch of research, then collect those artifacts and tell a story that reflects the factual and actual situation that you can go out and verify for yourself. So that's where it becomes like, just, there's a whole bunch of books out there, but some are more useful than others. And that's like a guidebook to our world to say, hey, here's where they've purposely put these pitfalls. Protect yourself.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
So the question is like, you know, how can we help each other? Well, we don't help each other by engaging in outrage porn or perpetuating that or promoting that. And I heard Kokesh last week at his speech here in Hartford say that he at one point had to stop watching bad cop porn.
Yeah.
You know, cops beating people up and tasering and shooting people and all this stuff. It's like, what's going on?
You already know it's there. So I don't need to watch another black guy get fucking shot by a cop to make myself feel more self-righteous today.
Right. So the question is, once you know what's going on, what are we going to do about it? Well, we ourselves as individuals, that's where we do lack some power, because by ourselves, we don't have a whole lot. But you can voluntarily communicate with other people and voluntarily form some groups and voluntarily take action in a non-aggressive way that does preserve intellectual and physical self-defense. And that's how freedom, if it's ever going to be attained in this country, in this landmass, and if I don't see why it would be contained if we could figure out how to communicate it to people here, why it should be contained just within those boundaries, because internet media is international these days. So I think that what we're seeing is we're noticing all these little bubbles in the water, and we're like, hey, it might start to boil at some point. You've got some momentum out there. People are starting to think for themselves, and the ways and means of explaining ourselves to each other are getting better and better. I mean, back in 1776, you had Common Sense. It's a little pamphlet. Today, you've got Kokesh's Freedom. It's like 100 pages. And if you can get people to read the first 10 pages, you're into having a good conversation with them. Probably if they'll read 10 pages of anything. If they're intaking new information, their mind is probably open for business. And our minds should stay open until we identify that which exists, and that's, you know, the facts. And here now, your mind can close on that. There's no contradictions. Good. Close the mind. Open them back up, you know, open the mind back up when we have some new, relevant, credible information that doesn't, you know, that goes outside of what we thought we knew. And that's just a natural process of learning. So the closed-minded mentality is assuming that you already know what's going on because you went through school and you get Time Magazine and Newsweek and, you know, you're in a Fortune 500 executive club or whatever. It's like, that doesn't mean anything. And the money that they're giving out, the Federal Reserve notes, is not something that you want to go out there and compromise your integrity over, because it's less than zero. It's less than worthless.
Yeah.
You know? So it's being used as a trick for people out there. And if you look at the people that go out and go to these contractors every day and design military weapons and do all sorts of crazy things to other human beings on the other side of the planet, I mean, just that's a result of many years of not asking any questions and making many, many tens of thousands of assumptions.
Absolutely.
So it's not that the people participating are necessarily evil, or even the people at the top, Skinner and Pavlov and these guys. I'm sure they thought they were saving the world. But it's not my place to judge them, whether they are good or evil. They existed. They did these things. These things have consequences that permeate up to today. They're dead and gone. Doesn't matter. What matters is how to remain free of those systems they created back then.
Absolutely. And we can do that by opening up our mind to new ideas, obviously, but using tools in order to be able to interpret those and live a more meaningful life. And as a result, you're going to have some views that are going to be in contradiction to the domination paradigm that we live in right now, where there is a massive amount of people in prison, where there's a massive amount of individuals who are being regularly murdered by the state. and there is 400,000 children who were legally kidnapped by the state. So those are all there. But to be able to get some workable tools to be able to interpret those is obviously very helpful. So, Rich, thank you very much for being on. Where can people find more of your info?
My website is tragedyandhope.com, and the podcast curriculum that I publish is called the Peace Revolution Podcast.
Cool. And, of course, people can find my book at legallykidnapped.net. That's Legally Kidnapped, the Case Against Child Protective Services. If you want some tools to be able to fight the state in a way that you can actually do today to be able to help protect you and your family, as well as, of course, the website is www.libertarian-atheist.com. I'm working on a new website project thing that I will be introducing to the public very soon. Very mysterious. And hopefully it'll be helpful for a lot of other people as well. So I'll definitely be throwing that out soon. Hopefully we'll have a few more shows with Rich in the future where we can talk a bit more about these concepts. And I hope everyone listening found this enjoyable and worthwhile. Y'all have a great day.